He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
Yes, and my partner Jay is in Europe at the moment and may be back with some interesting information in a few weeks about the car situation in Europe. But what I'd like to talk about, and at least start with on this particular show, for whenever our listeners are hearing it, is I've been doing, as regular listeners know, we've been talking, Jay and I, batting back and forth the electric car world that's coming at us almost like a rocket ship. Not really, but it's coming faster than I think some of us predicted it would when we first started talking about it, which was months ago. I've done a lot of thinking and done some interviewing of people with cars and electric cars and plug-in hybrids and the fact, and also thinking a lot about the fact that we broadcast this show from a very rural part of the state of Connecticut, which is not close to urban centers and urban living environments where electric cars may be a far more pragmatic type of vehicle to have going forward, at least certainly in the early stages of this problem of electrifying America, which is going to happen if electric cars are going to become ubiquitous throughout the country within the next 40 years. And I use 40 years instead of 15 years or 10 years because while we see predictions of electric vehicles becoming the norm, California is one state that's trying to make it the norm for sales. I think it's by 2035. There's a lot that's being avoided in the discussion phases of this situation, having to do with what happens to make it pragmatic to have an electric car. And those who have listened to me on this show for maybe some weeks or months know that I say I'm a driver. And by that I mean, I don't do it often, but when I do it big. I take trips in the car. And we've been talking, that has direct connection to this range anxiety factor, which is still big, even with local people in local places like our Northwest Connecticut corner, the broadcast area, and the surrounding tri-state area. First of all, if you're going to get an electric car that's all electric, you have to have your own, you should be putting in your own charging station at your house. Secondly, I think electric cars are very, very appropriate for people who don't plan on really using their primary car for trips over 200 to 250 miles a day, round trip or one way. That takes a lot of people out of the pipeline for electric cars in the near future, and you see it when you drive the interstates around the country. Certainly right now it's in the eastern part is where I drive a lot, 95 in Connecticut, New York State Thruway, roads down to New York City and back, and every morning and afternoon for the commuting part of the crowd that's on those roads, they are commuting from their house, presumably to their workplace and back. And in most cases, if you look at the direct line between Sharon, Connecticut, and New York City, it's roughly 95 miles straight lined to the mid-Manhattan area, plus whatever drive around you have to do in the city to get to where you're going to be. Now, the city may have parking garages that have, at least right now, a few charging places in their parking garage areas for electric cars only. I don't have an electric car, so I can't give anybody a specific situation. So, but to that end, they've wired those garages so that maybe there are a half a dozen in the bigger garages, a half a dozen charging stations for a half a dozen electric cars that might come in on a daily basis. And those first six people would probably park their cars all day and have them connected to the charging station. So anybody else coming in during the daytime might not have access to a charging port. That's one thing to think about if you're going to get an electric car and you're going to be parking in New York City, unless they stop us from going into New York City by adding urban fees and the like that discourage us from driving into New York, which is also a topic of discussion. But back to the electric car situation. they are very practical around our corner. I've talked to people who have plug-in hybrids and electrics, and for the most part, they are thrilled with their electric cars. Once they go on a trip, however, some of that thrill wears off when they have their first encounter with a range anxiety situation, because they haven't really factored in what that all means until they drive on a trip that may be 300 miles, between, let's say, 200 and 300 miles long, and they want to get there in one day and in a relatively easy fashion. That's when the problem starts up, because they don't really understand what the problem is when you have to stop and charge your car en route if you can't get to point B in one charge. And then they have to find a place, and a lot of people don't really know what that is. All these electric cars come with programs in their computers and on their screens where you're supposed to be able to find a ready charging station, maybe conveniently located, maybe not conveniently located, and maybe working and maybe not working, and maybe not enough units available in certain places, like the major gas pumps that are on along Route 95, for example. There are probably anywhere from 10 to 20 gas pumps, and it doesn't take very long to get in line and get your gas there versus finding charging stations limited to half a dozen or less and have them all occupied. For those people who drive like that, I'm not sure the electric car is ready to go, all electric, that is. Hybrids are the answer, in my opinion. And I've been driving as a hybrid vehicle since 2009. Started out with the Toyota Camry hybrid I had for a few years, which was wonderful back then. And it graduated to a Hyundai Sonata hybrid sedan, which I still have and probably will keep for a long time, which does not need any kind of plug-in attachment to keep going. From point A to point B, it is a gasoline, you know, this is not new news to a lot of you listeners, but it is not a plug-in. You have a gasoline engine that comes on and off as needed, and it runs on electric power when it can until the battery charge in the battery system goes down to where the engine comes on to start charging and takes over the drivetrain as well. I can get 600 plus miles per tank full with my current hybrid vehicle, which there is no range anxiety to have to deal with the hybrid line of vehicles as opposed to the pure electric vehicles. Given that, I'm interested to see what's going to happen when UPS and boxcars start becoming electrified and not hybrid electrified, start out from the warehouse where they get loaded up down in Watertown, Connecticut, or wherever it is, Waterbury, Connecticut, and have to drive up into the northwest corner to start their daily routes, which is 40-plus miles away, and they are loaded down with packages, and are they going to be appropriately usable in the rural areas of the country where you have to start out at an urban warehouse area where they get loaded up and have to drive up and down hills, getting to little towns in the countryside, miles from there, where they've been charged overnight at their charging station, and try to spend all day long delivering packages. I'm wondering whether that's going to actually be a viable alternative to keeping fossil fuel trucks on the road. My initial thinking is it isn't. We'll see. I'm also interested, and I have no idea how the electric buses are working in the urban parts of Connecticut where they've been sort of having experimental sort of numbers of buses, electric buses running daily trips instead of the diesel buses, which they've been replacing with these electric buses. Nobody's talking about that. It may be very wonderful. Whether school buses could become electric and do a complete school run up in the northwest corner, where our regional high school, for example, has the town of Kent, for example, is far south, and I understand bus rides are an hour long for some of the students when they get on in Kent and get up to before they can get up to school in the morning, in the same way going back home. So are electric school buses going to be possible in the future? Jill, you want to chime in on this? Because
you know that I have an opinion.
I would like to hear your opinion. We don't have Jay to give us his opinion, so the listeners might want to listen to what you think about this discussion.
You've shut me down each time I've mentioned it, but I will say it again. I don't think that I think that the current technology is virtually obsolete, and unless there is new and better, which I suspect there is, it's not feasible to have anything other than hybrid and just regular petrol. So, but there
short term,
are.
I agree with you. So, certainly, for the near term, I agree.
So long term, I don't know. Rolls Royce is making these literally electric planes. Now they're not going to have a charging. They can't possibly have a charging problem, because if you're going to run out of gas, you know, over Newfoundland, it's going to be a really inefficient.
Run out of electricity, you're talking about.
So to speak. Run out of juice. Run out of puff.
Run out of juice.
Run out of puff is what I'm trying, which was one of my favorite things that Jay didn't like very much, but it was a police sergeant in someplace in the country, the UK.
The thing that I think we all need to realize is everybody that's been saying, but by 2035, all sorts of things are going to change in the way we are able to buy vehicles, whether it be a truck, whether it be cars, whether they be airplanes that could fly electric or not. I think there's going to be a readjustment of timing that's going to come in and become a realistic delay for much of the stuff that is fantasized in a lot of the discussion circles that are going around the world, if not the country, on this move to electrification of various types of vehicles. The other thing that is now big at the car show that was in Detroit or wherever the first car show was, is that they had flying cars there.
And there are also vertiports.
And they're electric.
Yep. No, I'm not kidding. In a different universe, so to speak, there are. I believe that the technology is available for that. I just don't think that this plug-in, you know, people obviously don't remember, but old showrooms, at the turn of the last century, in 1907, whatever, they all had their vehicles and they were plugged into the floor. They were plug-ins. They were electric. And so I've just, and there were electric buses and there was electric everything. So there's something, I'm just going to say, something happened along the way. But what we definitely know, just like, eating insects isn't particularly good, even if you cover them in chocolate, there is no efficiency once you get out of highly populated
areas
to, trying to make it work. And we can go to here, and it's just simply endorsing what you were saying earlier, but you can drive 45 miles without even knowing it. You just between grocery store, got to go to the grocery store, got to go to the vet, got to go to work. That's 50 miles.
For those 45-mile trips, and let's say under 100-mile trips, plug-in hybrids are really good for 45-mile daily trips, except that, as I have said to those who have and maybe people listen or not, if you really do only drive 40 miles a day before you plug your plug-in hybrid back in, then, and hybrid means that there's also a gasoline engine
then you're good.
Backing up, you don't use any gas. And that becomes another issue as far as gas situations, gas needs, needing you need fresh gas for vehicles eventually, be it monthly or 6 months or something like that. And there are enough people around here that don't do more than 45 miles a day. And I know one woman who's got her Toyota RAV4 hybrid, and she just extols how wonderful it is to be able to go all electric for under 45 miles before the engine comes on. And short of her suddenly deciding to go to Hartford, Connecticut, for example, and back.
Yeah,
never going to use gasoline.
And I guess what I'm saying is, as long as there's limited chance of you ever having to go to Hartford, or you'll be willing to drive the person if they do, then then it's a lifestyle fine, and that's fine. But if you're making a lifestyle decision, but you're being but everybody's trying to be, you're looking for a common denominator, you're going to find that it's complex.
There is no common denominator, really. But for single-car people, I think it's got to be a very careful decision based on their lifestyle and what they're doing before they go out and just sort of plug into an electric car purchase. And you agree, of course, with that. Back to the trucks in the situation. They're getting ready. There already are apparently some tractor trailer trucks on the roads, western part of the country, more than any that I know of in the eastern, that are plying roads between warehouses, and actually, I don't know what the range is for those trucks. But on an earlier show, I discussed the situation about a pickup test that had been done with a fully laden pickup, I think with a trailer pulling something else with weight on it too, only getting, I think, 70 miles or less before the batteries would not go any further. And this is for a fully laden pickup truck. This is not for an empty pickup truck, or let's say a pickup truck used by maybe contractors, where the range advertises in the 200 to 225 mile range and would probably be very adequate around our northwest corner, for example, as long as they didn't try to go off on a weekend jaunt with a 10,000-pound boat behind it, going up, trying to get up to the, let's say, Great Lakes or something to entertain themselves. They might not make it easily in a daytime trip for that situation. So that's the other thing that's going to happen. That's going to keep the battery technology at bay, because you only can. It doesn't matter how good the technology is or the battery storage is. You can only fit so many batteries, both in terms of the price of the number of batteries you need in these trucks and the size of the trucks to give you a certain range, no matter what the technology has evolved to as we go forward. There are other alternative fuels that are talking hydrogen and all that, but I don't know. I don't see that being practical, because then you've got the same infrastructure problem countrywide of hydrogen refueling stations, and you can't just put in hydrogen refueling stations, I don't believe, like you can put in gas stations like we see today all over the place. So there's a whole lot of stuff going on in this change, trying to wean us off of total fossil fuel vehicles to alternative fuel vehicles. Mainly we've been talking about the electrification part of it, that is going to go at a slower pace than, even though it's picked up remarkably quickly, especially in the high fuel pricing. I mean, Teslas are sold out. You cannot get a made-to-order Tesla in certain models. You can't even place an order right now until a certain date in the future. Ford has cut off the order bank for the Lightning pickup truck until the 2024 model year, I think. That may change, partly because of supplies shortages, chip shortages, but just order shortages. They had 200,000 orders for the Lightning. I do not know how many of those are going to be fulfilled in the 2022 model year, certainly not 200,000. But the order banks were closed just because they had so many backup people wanting to buy them. They just said, "Well, unless you want to wait 2 years, we're not going to open the order banks again." So, certainly from a marketing standpoint, it is all systems go for the electrification situation. But from a pragmatic situation, anybody really thinking about doing a lot of driving is probably going to understand that electrification is not for them.
I think that that's a cogent way of presenting it. Do you want to do a two-minute safety tip, or do you have another?
Yeah, I did. On a recent show, I had an idea about safety tips. I'm trying to pull it up now, as I know we're getting to the end of this show. the usual stuff still bothers me, as it does bother you, which is signaling dysfunction amongst drivers, if it even exists at all.
That's a good term for it.
People just distracted driving is a problem. I keep seeing damage on the sides of highways, you know, where they have those guardrails, whether they're metal or whether they're the wooden posts. And I see little areas around our local towns where some of them that have been there for years and have been hit recently. And it's not because of rot that they've fallen over, but people are still having trouble on these on our little town roads, maybe holding the lanes, maybe because of distraction, maybe not. But the real thing that bothers me is the lack of people who are on bicycles and people who are walking. The lack of their understanding of how invisible they are in certain hours of the day and in certain walking and biking areas when you're under trees or on cloudy days when you're under trees and they're not wearing bright clothing. I can't emphasize enough the feeling that I have that people should be wearing vests of bright colors, be they walking, be they biking. The bikers, to a certain credit, have fairly good lighting in some of these people with these strobe lights, red in the back and white in the front. If they're not dead, the batteries aren't dead and they're working. But boy, when you're driving along these roads and the trees are hanging over them and in the dusk,
yeah,
which is getting earlier in the afternoon and later in the morning, you cannot see people. And you really need to stay focused on the drive on the driving all the time and not be fussing around with mascara or radio dial changing and the like. And
or food.
Your eyes not looking straight ahead.
Or food. And, or, you know, then the other thing that I'm just going to weigh in on is when people don't know where they are and are fully reliant on their GPS, and I know a lot of younger people who are, you know, like, yeah, they don't use the environment to show them where they were. They just rely on
GPS.
Yeah, and understandable, except that you are not looking at things the same way if you're not using the environment to sight yourself.
Okay.
And therefore,
well,
you're going to possibly miss somebody who's, you know, just burbling.
Signaling dysfunction is certainly there. Oh, the other thing I worry about is that DRLs, or daytime running lights, they only are running in the front of your vehicle, owners. Their taillights are not on during the day, and they therefore do not come on when you do not turn. If you do not turn your headlights on after you've stopped, after the daylight is come and gone, but you still think you can see the road ahead of you, because the DRLs are bright enough to show you just enough light so you think you can see the road and go down the road, but you can't see some of these cars when you come up behind them or when they're behind them. They are dark in the back. And along with the driving dysfunction issues we've been discussing, that means if you're not paying attention, you could run into the back of one of these cars. So there,
yeah,
we go.
We don't really want that to happen. We really, really don't. He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.